Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music by John Corigliano, the lullaby for Natalie, performed today by our guest, Anne Akiko Myers, violinist, performing with the London Symphony Orchestra, Leonard Slatkin conducting. Jill Pasternak here with a delightful guest today. It's really a pleasure to speak to her once again. We've done several interviews for Crossover. Anne Akiko Myers, welcome once again, Anne.
Thank you so much, Jill.
Also with us today is composer Mason Bates, and we'll speak with him as well. It's hard to keep up with you because you're always releasing new albums, and I don't know where you get the stamina and where do you get the creative urge, but I can understand what you did here because this new one, the American Masters one, is really, really quite beautiful. And I know when I received it and I said, no, she didn't do another album already. I mean, you really do just kind of turn them out. You turn them out and they're beautiful. And this one really was rather interesting, I thought. And perhaps we can talk a little bit about it and how you came to actually put these three together, you know, Barber, Corigliano, and Bates. And I think historically they do go together, but tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's such an interesting bond between the three generations of composers, and I wanted to showcase how Barber has essentially written one of the most important American violin concertos and is very much kind of the voice of the past. And John wrote a beautiful lullaby for the birth of my firstborn daughter, Natalie, in 2010.
Absolutely breathtaking, this one that's on this album. Absolutely breathtaking.
Yes. My daughter actually religiously has that on repeat all throughout the night and must go to sleep to that lullaby and wake up to the lullaby. And if you even try to touch the CD machine, you will be injured. She's very proud of that lullaby. And John's very much the voice of today and has had such a profound influence as a teacher and as a composer. And we've all felt his influence. And the music of the future is the great Mason Bates. He wrote his first concerto for any instrument, and this being for violin for me, is quite a phenomenal composition he has written. And in my opinion, one of the most important works to have been composed in the last 50 years, or essentially since the Barber Violin Concerto was written.
Is it as demanding as the Barber? It seems as though the Barber is one of the most demanding. I think it's the last movement, isn't it, that everyone talks about on the Barber?
Yes. It's so very different in character from the first two that are very romantic in style and very lush and melodic. And it's a beautiful kind of unfolding of a story. And with the last movement, you suddenly get this very rhythmically challenging perpetual motion where you're praying that you will survive it and survive this marathon. With Mason's piece, his Concerto is the story of a hybrid dinosaur bird that takes flight. And there are two distinctive personalities that I'm focused on performing throughout the concerto. And one is a very lyrical, beautiful, elegant, kind of lithe creature. And the other flip side is a very rhythmic, very challenging, you know, like every bar felt like there was a different time signature. And with Mason's exploration into the synthesizer and electronica, you really do feel those textures throughout the whole concerto, which is so now, in a language of his own. And it's so uniquely Mason. And, you know, I really thrive playing his music, and I really love the challenge of playing his concerto every single time I'm able to bring it to the stage.
Now, I wanted to say one thing. I was very proud of myself. I just kind of put it on. That's the way I listen. And I thought I heard birds at the end. And I knew nothing about the preparation, nothing about the storyline that you had or anything you were trying to. I'm talking to Mason mm-hmm. now. I was so taken with your music. It really was very, very beautiful. And I kind of felt something. I don't want to you to take this as any kind of an insult, but there was something about it that reminded me a little bit of the, you know, the Butterfly Lovers Concerto. You know that?
Yes, I do.
The Chinese, yeah. There was an Asian feel to it. And the whole thing, there was a similarity in feel. And I think you may understand what I'm talking about. And, but I did.
The second movement.
Yes, yes, yes. And then, of course, at the end, of course, the mm-hmm. birds. I heard birds, you know. And again, when we listen cold, you know, it's a whole different approach. And you say, well, what do you see here? What influences do you see? And this really kind of, I mean, it's very, very different on another level. But there was a feeling there of, I don't know what you would call it, an intimacy or... Also, the tonal pattern was kind of pentatonic. I don't know, you know, if you want to use some comparison, but that's what I got. And then I also got the birds at the end. So I wasn't really looking at any description of the music, and I thought also it was very challenging. And you know, technically, is that right?
Yes, it was. It is very challenging technically, but I really loved how collaborative the process was to work with Mason, and he was very open to technical suggestions, and we Skyped back and forth. We spoke, we texted. I mean, it was a very 21st century collaboration that went on.
Yes,
and his music is very cinematic, accessible, and yet the textures are so varied and so interesting for everybody involved that it creates a dialogue that is unlike really anything else I've heard.
Well, I really appreciate that. And it's interesting that the story of it came through without, you know, glancing at the program notes or just kind of taking a cold listen. You know, when you're writing a piece of music and you're seeking to evoke something, you always are trying to do it in a way that is fresh, but also it you know, needs to evoke that thing that you're trying to bring to life. And I think, you know, when you mentioned that it did conjure up the transformation of the dinosaur to the bird at the end, that it speaks a lot to Anne's comfort with this piece at this point. You know, it's a little bit like when you watch a ballerina who's doing unbelievably difficult things, but it looks like she's just floating. And really does float that last movement that has so many notes in it, but they sound as if they're just sort of fluttering off her instrument. And, you know, that's an incredible, incredible feat to make something sound very light and bird-like when, in fact, it was quite hard.
I felt like a dinosaur throughout it. Clomp, clomp.
Here now, the Violin Concerto by Mason Bates, performed by our guest today, Anne Akiko Myers, with the London Symphony Orchestra, Leonard Slatkin, conducting. We just heard the Violin Concerto by Mason Bates, performed by our guest today, Anne Akiko Myers, with the London Symphony Orchestra, Leonard Slatkin, conducting. Mason, do you play an instrument at all, other than probably the piano, I guess you play, right?
I do play the piano, and man, I wish I could have gone back in time and played a string instrument, because it's so hard to write for an instrument. As a solo instrument, when you don't play it, you know, we write as a composer. I write for instruments all the time that I don't play, but you understand those instruments. You understand how they work, and you know, it's kind of like characters in a play you're writing. You know what the characters are. Often from the outside, when you're really writing a concerto, you need to really understand it from the inside, and that's why this piece took a tremendous amount of work. And Anne was so patient with me and so respectful in working together. So, no, I just play the piano. But, man, in the next life, I hope that I play the cello, the violin, and probably would help to play the harp. It's got a lot of pedaling. That...
Well, I'm a harpist myself, so I know. And I went to Juilliard also. So, I mean, that was my first love, and for many, many years, and so on. But I was going to say to you, you know, at least writing for a stringed instrument, you do have certain, you know, accessibility. If you've played the harp, you know what I'm talking about. I mean,
yeah, I have to add, Mason, you also play records. I mean, you are a DJ, and you definitely hear and you feel those kind of quick samplings of sounds throughout the concerto as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's interesting about, you know, the DJing part of my world is that it's really put a focus on transitions. I mean, a transition really in the world of DJing is a mix. You know, if you have two records, as a DJ, you know, you have really three things. There's the two records, and there's that place in between where you're mixing them. And so this piece has three movements that all blend together, and the transformation is very much a part of that. And also the idea of, you know, little samples of things kind of popping out of the mix. You hear that quite rhythmically in the string ensemble, which almost becomes like a group of percussionists in the way that the lower strings tap on the bodies of the cellos and basses.
When you decide you want to write something, how does that start? Somebody calls you and says, "I want you to write something." I play the kazoo, or do you say, "I have a desire to write a concerto," or I think that there's repertoire that is necessary for other instruments. I mean, after all, as a composer, of course, I think the piano is essential. I would imagine so. But how do you come about it, other than being commissioned, you know, to write something?
I mean, most of the time these days, it does come from a commission, and the commissions are gratefully pretty open-ended. I mean, they'll give you a time limit and an orchestration max, and you can do whatever you want within that. What's interesting about this concerto is that it started the other way. You know, Anne and I said, we want to do this piece, and, you know, I really wanted to write a concerto for her, and we had to go and approach people about doing it. I don't think I'd ever really done that. And that, I think, put something into the process that was, you know, very heartfelt. You know, I mean, Anne and I both were committed to this and even had, you know, musical ideas about this before it was, you know, like programmed by any orchestra. And when the Pittsburgh Symphony agreed to do the premiere with Leonard Slatkin, I mean, it was phenomenal. But it you know, honestly, I think the kind of impetus to start talking about it before anything was written on paper was, I think, special in this case.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that the whole genesis of this project really has evolved over, I would say, 7 to 8 years. And I originally asked Mason to rearrange the Beethoven Violin Concerto cadenzas. And I really wanted to get his take on those. And after I premiered those and performed it in the Netherlands, we started discussing the possibility of a violin concerto. But the reality of getting something like that done is just a really long process. And I wrote to Leonard Slatkin, who immediately was incredibly enthusiastic and wanted to support the project as much as possible. And that's when a co-commission happened with the Pittsburgh Symphony and myself, and we were able to premiere it in December of 2012.
Well, it's really a very beautiful, beautiful work, and the whole album is quite beautiful. And the lullaby, of course, is just stunning. And Mason Bates, I guess you're going to be a name on the roster now, I guess. You're going to put yourself on the map.
Well, that's Anne. I mean, the great thing is that, you know, Anne not only has performed this with so many different orchestras, but by recording the piece, she's really done my music a great service, and, you know, such a wider audience can hear it. You know, if you're a symphonic composer, you're blessed because you're writing for this incredible medium, but you're also a little bit cursed because, you know, it's not like a garage band. It takes a lot of time and money to put a recording together, and it means a lot to me that she did this. So,
how does it work when you're writing and you say, I mean, you're not a violinist. You know, how does that work? Of course, you learn, I guess, when you're studying about instruments and how to write for them. But that's a whole other ball game. The whole creative process, when you get the melody in your head, do you get a sense of where you want to go with it? Do you want to soar? Do you want to be contemplative? I mean, is there something that happens, perhaps not even musically as much as emotionally, as a composer? Because I don't think we ever get a chance to talk to composers about their inspiration and how things happen. I mean, things happen, you know.
Yeah, what's interesting is that I think when people see a full orchestral piece, they think, oh my God, I mean, how did that ever happen? It's so complicated. You know, it's probably something like, you know, you see a movie and it's so complicated and all these edits and color and shots. But it started with a screenplay. And, you know, when a screenplay has been written by somebody who has had a lot of experience in writing for film, you know, when they're putting those words on the page, they're not just seeing those words. I mean, they're seeing that movie. And, you know, you build it out from there. And I do think that when I first started writing, I was definitely writing for the piano and then orchestrating. After doing it mm-hmm. for so long, I now really think orchestrally. And, you know, it really is possible to you know, think about instruments that you don't have in front of you. It's kind of one of those skills that you build. The great thing about Anne is that I've heard her over the years, and it's great to be able to put a face to an instrument you're writing for. It really humanizes the whole experience.
We've been speaking with our guest today, violinist Anne Akiko Myers and composer Mason Bates. And now from her very successful Smile CD, we hear The Fantasy by Olivier Messiaen, performed with Akira Eguchi, pianist. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group, Incorporated. Thanks for listening.